Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike.
Lauren.
When was the last time you used an Alexa gadget?
I would say it was a couple weeks ago with my Sonos.
Ah, right. The old Sonos Alexa integration.
Yeah.
What did you ask it?
I asked it to play KCRW, my favorite NPR station.
And how did Alexa respond?
It gave me exactly what I was asking for, which was kind of shocking.
Huh. Well, what if I told you that Alexa is now entering the Gen AI chat?
I would say I'm not surprised. But also it fills me with a lot of questions, like are hallucinations going to start coming out of my speaker now?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your query.
Oh boy.
Let me make something up for you though.
Oh boy.
All right, we should talk about this.
Let's do it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
And I'm Michael Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired.
And we're joined this week by Wired senior writer Will Knight, who is Zooming from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Will, welcome back to the lab.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
So, Will, I have to pull this one quote from your recent Wired story just to start us off. Rohit Prasad, who leads AI development at Amazon, told you this week, "If I ask Alexa how the Red Sox are doing and they have just lost, it will come back with an empathetic tone." Okay, one, Will, this is the most Massachusetts statement ever. I'm glad you're our roving reporter on the ground there in the land of Massachusetts people. Two, it pretty much sums up the major makeover that Alexa is getting. So tell us about this. What happened at Amazon's annual product event earlier this week?
Yeah, okay. So they announced that, as you mentioned, Alexa is going to be using generative AI, one of these large language models, which we've heard so much about that go into ChatGPT. Amazon's been kind of quiet on the language model front, but it turns out they've been working on putting this into Alexa, which is, as you also say, kind of an obvious step. Like at a time when we've got ChatGPT that can do all these amazing things, having voice assistants that only respond to like one or two commands is kind of lame. So now Alexa will try and do much more complex back and forth. And they're trying to build things on top of that, like the intonation related to the Red Sox, who I have to confess, I don't know if they lost or won.
Are you a Red Sox fan?
I mean, legally I am because I'm in Boston, I think. You have to be.
Fair enough.
But I have no
idea.
Were
you a Red Sox fan when you were growing up in the UK?
Absolutely not.
Fair enough.
I followed cricket, which is very, I don't want to, let's not get into that.
So one of the interesting things that I think Amazon showed off this week is that Alexa can now have conversations in a more natural way. Like you mentioned, there's going to be more back and forth with the speaker. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So one of the things that language models enable is they give computers this ability to handle conversation language in so much more of a sophisticated way. So Alexa can now answer much more complex questions, open-ended questions, also engage in a bit of back and forth. So you don't have to keep saying Alexa. It will know when you've half finished a sentence or wait for you, hopefully. So this is a lot of this is to do with this sort of magic of magic or the advances in language models. It just really is a big quantum leap in the ability of computers to use language. So the idea when they showed all these demos, you know, these canned demos of Alexa coming up with poems and stories and doing quite what seemed like quite impressive conversational, conversation with people. the question is like how well that works in real life. I'm excited for when it's released and we have some of the bloopers and weird things that Alexa comes up with.
Mike, you brought up a good point earlier, which is that some of these text-based responses we're getting from generative AI apps are very wordy, and we don't necessarily want that when we're using our voice to talk to a computer. So I'm wondering, Will, if Amazon said anything about that, how they're maybe reframing or rephrasing answers that are generative, but still to make them succinct and like do the thing that you're asking it to do.
Yeah, so I asked Rohit Prasad about this, and he confirmed that they are doing some of the training that comes after building one of these large language models oriented towards this kind of interaction. So when ChatGPT is built, they have all this interaction that tries to, that has people say, this is a good answer, this is a bad answer. And so Amazon is doing its own version of that, but tailored towards whether it's a good answer through a voice speaker. So that will include making sure that answers are more succinct, hopefully. Because you don't want to have Alexa rambling on for 4 or 5 minutes with every answer. So it will try to do it much, much more succinctly. I mean, the fun thing with generative AI is you can't really predict what it's going to do entirely. So there probably will be some instances where Alexa goes on for 4 minutes.
I love how Will has a great sense of adventure. The fun thing is we have no idea what this artificial general intelligence is going to do to our humanity. It's super fun.
Embrace the chaos.
What is Amazon training these models on? Like how much of this is reinforcement learning from human feedback, from all of the existing queries in their database from us talking to Alexa all the time?
Yeah, that's a huge part of it, right? That is a big part of what they're bringing to this is all the training data they will already have from interactions with people, which they can tailor to then feeding to a model, try and get it to refine its answers to be better.
Yeah, this is something that listeners may not know. Every time you ask Alexa a question, a recording of you asking that question is held onto by Amazon. Maybe not every time, but you can assume that everything you say to your smart speaker, that your smart speaker responds to, is something that is being stored by Amazon. And you can go into your settings in your Amazon account, and you can see all of those recordings. You can delete all of them if you would not like Amazon to hold onto them, and use them to train Alexa to be better. But if you don't do anything, then you should know, if you don't already, that everything that you say to your smart speaker that it actually responds to is being saved and logged. So, Will, these updates are coming to Alexa everywhere that Alexa lives, which is in smart speakers made by Amazon and other companies that they've partnered with. It's also coming to the devices that Amazon makes that have cameras in them. The smart hubs, the smart home screens, the things that can see you when you're talking to Alexa. Amazon's doing some interesting things with the camera to power the interactions. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so they're using very primitive body language, whether you're looking at the camera and seem to be looking, waiting for a response to help guide whether it's going to jump in with an answer or wait for you to finish something or to know that the conversation's finished. And I think it is interesting because, you know, ChatGPT is really powerful, but it's just a text interface. We interact with it through text, which is very powerful, but there's a huge amount of human interaction which happens through voice as we're doing now or face-to-face over Zoom or whatever. So teaching machines to be better at that is, important in terms of, I guess, making these machines smarter and more capable. I think it also raises some really fascinating questions to me in terms of whether you can make machines that are more convincing to people, more persuasive, all those sorts of things is what they're sort of just starting to dabble in here. Maybe you can make a machine that's going to, really engage people and keep their attention for a lot of time, or even recommend things that will be, in a very convincing way.
Hmm. So, Will, on the business side, last year, layoffs reportedly hit the Amazon Alexa team pretty hard, and now their devices chief, Dave Limp, is on his way out the door, and Microsoft chief product officer Panos Panay is reportedly taking over. How is the Alexa team actually faring?
That's a great question. I mean, based on the news of the layoffs and Dave Limp leaving, I would have said there was a big, this is a shakeup as a part of Amazon maybe not feeling that they were doing as well as could be expected in this sort of generative AI era. But clearly they've been working on this stuff. So I don't know. I find it a little difficult to kind of gauge exactly how well they're doing.
It seems hard to gauge how much Alexa is actually making the company money. Clearly, the research and development around products like this cost a lot of money. And then there are infrastructure costs and obviously talent and things like that. And then the whole idea of Alexa is that eventually it has ads, right? Or you are using third-party apps where there's some kind of financial, transaction that's happening. Like you call an Uber from your Alexa or something. But we don't actually know how much money Alexa has made, correct?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, in theory, right? They sort of were in launching Alexa 10 years ago, kind of inventing this new computer interface that was going to change everything. But I don't know. In the last several years, it seems like voice interfaces haven't changed things massively, or haven't gone any further. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and I suppose this does offer an opportunity for them to try and, capture more of the market and build voice interfaces that are going to have more of people's attention, more opportunities for things like ads and selling products eventually.
So our future is not only generative, it's filled with even more ads.
Maybe also not even ads, just subtle ways that Alexa will mention we might be interested in something and then talk us into buying it.
Right. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about how generative AI Alexa is going to stand up to some of the other generative assistants that are out there.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here, stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite.
Engine ignition.
Click Here.
And liftoff.
Click Here, every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
In the tech journalism world, we sometimes refer to this time period as silly season or Tech-tember. Oh, I don't love that name, but it's true. This is what we say. Because of all the product announcements that companies put out at this time of year, they want to get ahead of the holiday season and make sure they're hitting those ship goals for the fourth quarter of the year. But this year, it might as well be called generative AI season because of all of the new AI tools that tech companies are releasing. Well, we just talked about Amazon Alexa getting infused with generative AI, but Amazon is months behind competitors in terms of releasing this, even if the underlying technology itself isn't necessarily behind. So what advantages do companies like OpenAI, Google, Microsoft, Meta, even Apple have right now over Amazon?
Well, OpenAI, Microsoft, Google have a big advantage in that they've very clearly built the biggest models that are out there. We don't know how big the model that and powerful the model Amazon has is. And then those companies also have a lot more training data specifically designed to improving the performance of that model, which I don't think Amazon really has. It has a lot of data around simple voice interactions. So maybe it has an edge in some of that. But when it comes to the raw kind of power of these models, I don't think it is likely to be anything like OpenAI or Google's.
I think one advantage Amazon does have is that its interface is almost entirely spoken, right? It's a natural conversation interface. It's not a type something into a box and get a written response. So it does feel like a natural step that what comes next is that all of the chatbots that are text-based are going to start talking.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's going to be something that everybody will look to do. I mean, what's most amazing perhaps about ChatGPT in some ways is its ability to mimic human communication, even though it's just it's written form. But there's so much communication that involves the way we speak, the way we, you know, body language and those sorts of things. So it makes sense to try and expand the capabilities of these chatbots this way. That also, you know, does have the potential to maybe improve the intelligence, I'm making quote marks, of these bots, if that's measured by how good they are at convincing us that they're intelligent. Which they would do if they have, you know, better ability to sort of mimic human expression and emotion and things like that. And I think that can be also seen as part of this, what I think we're going to see is more kind of multimodal AI in that, like, use of imagery, use of audio, video. They've fed these models all the text there is on the internet. So what they're probably going to do next is feed them all of the YouTube and all of the audio we can find, those sorts of things. And it's an interesting kind of question whether you need that, like the way that biological intelligence often uses a lot of that sort of input to learn. And so it's possible that could lead to some improvements in machine intelligence, again, in quotes.
So here's a fun anecdote. I think you guys both know that one of my pet peeves, if we'll call it that, with consumer tech products is when you just get served up all of these random memories that you'd rather not see or weren't thinking about for years. Mm-hmm. This happened recently with Amazon. Amazon said, here's like a reminder of memories in your Amazon cloud. And I thought to myself, I don't think I've ever stored photos in Amazon's cloud. What is this? So clicked through, went, first of all, thank God it wasn't spam. Like, could have just ended up, you know, going down some weird rabbit hole. Anyway, clicked through and there were photos there from when I reviewed the Amazon Echo Look camera. In, I think, 2017. Do you guys remember this camera?
This is the one that judges your outfit. Yes. And tells you what clothes to buy?
Yes. Amazon has like a stockpile of full body images of me wearing different clothes. And it was, yes, it was giving thumbs up and thumbs down and rating things based on weather and geographic data and all this weird stuff.
And it's serving this to you as memories.
As a memory.
Oh, no.
But also it made me think, oh my gosh, Amazon still has all of this data in its cloud that I haven't deleted because I was reviewing that for my previous publication. And it was a weird little product. Yeah. And it's just a good reminder, I think, that a reminder that some memories are forever and Amazon may, in fact, train its AI on them.
Mm-hmm.
I once went to a conference, a weird little machine learning conference in Canada, where there was a whole track about machine learning for fashion that was sponsored by Amazon. A lot of it was like trying to predict what the next fashion would be so they could start making stuff. I think there were probably some researchers working on that weird camera as well.
Yeah. So Amazon and others are just hoovering up our body data, our body language data, and to Will's point, probably sucking up YouTube videos and other things that show how people move, because the next iteration of this might be some kind of generative product that like mimics our body language or responds to our body language.
Yeah, I've actually been really curious about that, because with all of these voice assistants, the things that the companies are doing with them are leading towards mimicking human personality traits and like conversational tics that convey emotion and that convey some sort of like empathy with the person that they're speaking to. This is sort of troubling to me, and I'm curious to know what you think about this, Will, but it seems to me like a cold and unfeeling voice speaking to you is one thing, but a warm and inviting and empathetic voice that sort of fits into the tone of the conversation is something else entirely for these engineers to build.
Yeah, I think that's really troubling. I think arguably they shouldn't build these things to mimic people at all. They shouldn't be anthropomorphic because, one, they're not. It's inherently kind of misleading. It's also, you know, you see with ChatGPT, you can design that to convince people. Like it's actually been trained to try and convince people that its answers are good, even when it's lying. And so you can have systems that will be very convincing, compelling. You can train them to do that, to mimic this stuff, and we're really hardwired to respond to it. I think that's a really troubling direction, because you can see how companies could misuse that to try and persuade people or to manipulate them. I just think there's no reason why you can't design. I mean, I know there are some researchers who are trying to design interfaces that do offer up real intelligence, but aren't trying. They try and really distinguish it from being a human intelligence, which I think it's kind of, it's concerning. And I really think that one of the things you'll see is these language models being used as part of this kind of advertising, industrial complex, which is just, just makes so much sense. You could, just as you can do reinforcement learning with human feedback to get good answers, you could do it around whether it's persuade someone that they should click buy or add to cart on a product. And there's no way that the people who are, inside a company like Amazon wouldn't be thinking about that. Like, how do you mimic a very effective human salesperson?
Hmm. Some of our listeners have probably read Stephen Levy's story for us about OpenAI. It's a great feature. It's also our cover story this month, so everyone should go read it. But Sam Altman says at some point in the story that he envisioned a future in which we would have these physical or humanoid robots that are able to move and do things. And then eventually there would be these, many steps, but we'd get to some kind of general artificial intelligence and computers. But actually the opposite is happening. We're starting now with this crazy level of artificial intelligence that's very human-like, and maybe working our way up to something that is not amorphous, but actually has a physical form.
Mm. Yes, it's a smart speaker that sits on your counter that is the physical form.
Right, it's a tube. It's a puck. It's a $50 puck, but it's got Gen AI.
I do feel like we should mention that Alexa and other voice assistants are really good for accessibility for people that maybe can't do traditional types of input that we all take for granted. And speech is the easiest way for them to communicate with the computer. In that regard, there's a new feature in iOS 17 called Personal Voice, where you can actually like make your iPhone talk like you. Have either of you tried this?
No. Wait, how do I do this? Should we do this live?
It's
how do I do it?
Oh, well, unfortunately, we can't do it live, but it's a feature in the accessibility settings. It's called Personal Voice.
Okay.
And you read a series of phrases. It's just like all the other personal AI voice clone systems, right? You read a bunch of phrases. It takes about 15 to 30 minutes to read all of them. And then you set it down and it processes your voice. And it can take as long as a couple of days, because a lot of people are doing it right now, so it takes a lot of processing.
I'm creating
power.
A personal voice with my iPhone right now. It says record the phrase. Oh, okay, so I have to record it.
Yeah.
I'm creating a personal voice with my iPhone.
It's going to ask you to do that for like the next 30 minutes.
Okay.
So we can just let the tape roll if you want, and you can just do it right here on the show.
It says, you know what? I just tried that mic, and it said I had high background noise. Try to find a quieter location. So I think you really messed that up for me. Current sound levels are high and may impact my personal voice quality. You are affecting my personal voice quality. All right, I'm going to do this later.
So I've heard a few companies who track scams and phishing talking about voice cloning being used to mimic an executive at a company or something, who then calls up and tells somebody to transfer money. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure why you would want to your Siri to have your own voice. That sounds very weird to me. I don't like hearing my own voice. I don't want it telling me things.
Yeah, it's a tool for narcissists.
No, I can actually see it being useful for the opposite. What if you are not the narcissist in your dynamic? What if you just programmed personal voice to say, hey, how are you doing? And you have a friend or that family member who just, you've just given them a prompt and they go. You can just set your personal voice to ask them. And then they go off and you, you know, go, I don't know, chop tomatoes or whatever it is.
Oh, potatoes. Maybe, maybe that's down the line. So eventually you'll just say, okay, Siri, when somebody calls, just have a conversation. When grandma calls, just have a conversation for half an hour and fill her in on what I've been up to. And then you don't have to worry about it yourself. It'll do it all.
Why does grandma always get a bad rap? I wish my grandma would call.
Yeah.
She's dead. If she called, that would be remarkable. It's okay. Gen AI is going to solve all this. All right, Will, thank you so much for this recap of Amazon's news and your insights into Amazon's generative AI future. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our recommendations.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode to the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Will, what's your very human recommendation this week?
Oh, it's actually the opposite of the very human recommendation. And continuing the theme of sort of embracing the chaos of generative AI, I thought I'd recommend this program called AutoGPT, which I've been playing with, which is a, you basically install it on your computer and it will do tasks. It uses ChatGPT to figure out how to do things. So it's kind of like a small, like maniac intern that will do things for you. So I will tell it, like, please go and find the contact information of a CEO, and it will run off to the internet, do a bunch of searches, and surprisingly come back. It'll, you know, say, well, I figured out it's this name now. I'm going to go and look for his email address. So I found this one. I'm going to go verify it and then come back and do all these different things. It will also occasionally just go into kind of insane, like infinite loops where it's saying, I don't know how to do it. So I'm just going to keep searching and I don't know how to do that. So I'll search that as well. Or it'll start doing mad things on your computer. I think it's the future of computing, but at the moment it's slightly mad. But I enjoy it. So with the disclaimer that we're not responsible for damaging anybody's computer, I recommend playing with AutoGPT or similar.
Who makes this?
This is an open source project just built on top of ChatGPT or GPT-4. But this is something that OpenAI and Google and others are looking to do. They're looking, so this week Google announced that it was connecting Bard, its version of its ChatGPT rival, to some apps. So you can say, find all the recent emails about this and write me a document about it or add stuff to my, I'm not sure if you can add things to your calendar, but you starting to do stuff with apps. So I think that's really the future of where this is heading. You're going to start, it's going to be like completely new computer interface, but I'm just embracing the sort of the raw kind of like half built Linux version that runs amok. It's quite fun.
Excellent.
And also can exist outside of G Suite, which just makes it so much more fun.
Yes.
Mike, what's your recommendation?
I would like to recommend a book. It is a book that I just finished reading yesterday. It's called No Meat Required, and it's by the food writer Alicia Kennedy. I've spoken about Alicia Kennedy on the show before. I believe I recommended her Substack. So I was looking forward to the book. It is quite good. It's a book about where the food system in the world that we live in has gone wrong. So basically, a lot of the ecological problems and moral quandaries that we face as a society can be linked back to our food system, and particularly industrial factory farming of animals, industrial agriculture, and industrial animal agriculture. So these big systems, which are driven by capitalism and driven by greed, are destroying the planet, and they're making us unhealthy individuals. They're also putting us into moral tight spots. So the book traces the history of these systems and traces the history of other types of eating, like plant-based eating, indigenous gastronomy, small community farms, and looks at how they can coexist. But it does call for the end of industrialized agriculture and industrialized factory farming, which heartened me. It made me feel good to read that. Anyway, it's a great book. It's very wide-ranging. It's not the kind of book that you're going to be able to give to a meat eater and the meat eater will say, oh no, I now see the error of my ways and I will stop eating meat forever. In fact, the thing that I like about it the most is that it really calls for, if you're going to be an omnivore, you should be more conscientious about your food intake and what you eat and how much meat you eat. So really, that's what it's trying to do. It's trying to show us that, like, the future forward for the environment and for the economy and for, like, the good of all people on the planet is that we all just eat less meat and that we stop supporting those systems which are making us eat more meat. So I really liked it. I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who are thinking that I'm a dirty hippie, and you're absolutely right. I am a dirty hippie, and I firmly believe in all of these things that I'm saying. So it does come with that caveat. But if you are a vegetarian or if you're just a conscientious omnivore, I think you'll love the book.
And tell us the name again.
It's called No Meat Required.
No Meat Required.
By Alicia Kennedy.
Great.
Yeah. It turned me off of tech burgers, like Beyond and Impossible.
Oh, yeah? And yeah. Why is that?
Well, because those companies have a lot of, like, VC funding, and they're interested in making a bunch of money. So they're aiming to solve a problem that was caused by capitalism, and their solution is more capitalism, and that's a bad thing. So you should just eat more regular veggie burgers made of rice and grains and beets and things like that.
And beans.
Yes.
Cool.
One solution, I have a cat that catches a lot of large animals, including rabbits. And it has occurred to me that that might be a way to sustain oneself off the land.
Your cat is ferocious.
She is terrifying. Well, I often discuss with my seven-year-old how large she would need to be before she tried to eat me. And I think maybe just 2.5 times the size.
That's a great thought experiment.
Leona. Yeah.
Lauren, what's your recommendation?
My recommendation this week is a little bit of a shameless plug. It's my other podcast for Wired, Have a Nice Future. This week, we talked to the journalist Paul Tuff, who has written several books about education. And the conversation that he had this week with my co-host Gideon Litchfield was specifically about higher education, college in the US, why it has gotten so expensive, and why young people have sort of a negative sentiment right now about college, or at least a lower positive sentiment than they would have had a decade ago. It's a really interesting conversation about where the U.S. has gone wrong with college and what we can do to fix it. I enjoyed listening, even though it's my own podcast, I enjoyed listening to Gideon's conversation with Paul, and I think other people might find it interesting as well. So that is my recommendation.
Nice.
All right. That's our show. Will, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Alexa, thanks for joining us. Smart as always. And thank you all for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. We're still there. I guess I should start calling it X. Just check the show notes. Our producer is the excellent Boone Ashworth. Goodbye for now, and we'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.